Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We've got kind of a full house today. Sitting across from me is Gary LeMaster.
Not so silent, Gary, yes.
Not so silent. And we have Klaus von Stutterheim.
Klaus von Stutterheim.
Stutterheim is joining us. And we have a special guest today, Sam Olney. His official title is the Elections Director of the Arizona Democratic Party. But he's sort of the Democratic Party's Nate Silver. He's the statistician. He's the numbers guy. He's the guy who has one of those accounting shades.
He's the guy that if you're a candidate running for office, you love the guy, and if you're just a voter, you're probably not so thrilled with what he does. It's a thankless job.
So, talk for just a minute about the national election, because Sam is an expert in what's happening in Arizona, and this is going to be a wonky show. We're going to talk about statistics and numbers and what's been going on. And some election results in some details. We're in a situation nationally, of course, where the Democrats and the Democratic Party, but also the wider cultural Democratic Party, is actually the largest block of voters in the country.
All concentrated in heavily urban areas. So we have
a situation where, for example, Hillary Clinton is winning the popular vote by now over a million votes. The projections are it'll go to about 1.7, Gary.
Yes.
1.7 million votes, yet she's really lost the national election, which is decided by the Electoral College. This is the second time in quite a few years. So we have what I think is probably the largest group of people pretty much disenfranchised for various accidents and tricks. And so if you look at it, for example, if you look at the aggregate vote for the Senate, Democrats get far more votes than Republicans, yet Republicans end up with more senators. The same thing has always been true in the House, although it may not be true this year. In other words, the House, Republicans are getting more representation than their vote justifies at large. What we want to do is this week shift to talking about what's been going on in Arizona. And I guess the first thing I wanted to ask Sam is the sort of basic statistic. Republicans are still the largest political party here.
Yes, that's right. And thanks for referring to me as Nate Silver. So oftentimes I do get things wrong. But Republicans this
year—that's what I was referring to.
Okay,
Sam, getting
gotcha.
Things wrong.
Good. Republican registration was in first place. They were the largest political party up until
in Arizona.
In Arizona, yes. Thank you. They were the largest up until around between 2012 and 2016, the independent or no party affiliation became the largest political party up until this year. And this is something we see from time to time. You have to be of a registered party to participate in the presidential preference election. The presidential election draws more people than the midterm election. So the independents lost registrations. Democrats are still in we're in last place, but we have a very strong hold on it.
Very strong hold on last place.
Yes, very strong. What we saw in 2016 is that the Democrats outregistered Republicans. Not so much that we overtook them or the independents in overall registration, but we were able to make some small gains in the 2016 cycle.
Just for a little perspective, I read recently that in the 2014 cycle that 26% of registered voters basically participated in the primaries and chose the people in the state that would take the state offices. And so 26% of registered voters, but only 19% of all eligible voters in the state participated. So in the primaries. So you have a really small, you know, portion of the electorate deciding the races in Arizona. Is that true?
Yes. With a primary election, you always get the hyper-partisan people coming out, either Democrats or Republicans, and those people they love voting, and they love voting for their candidates. Unfortunately, independents have to choose a ballot, so oftentimes they don't participate in these elections. In 2014, I think that on the Democratic side, we had one primary statewide. There were a few legislative districts, but other than that, there wasn't too much going on.
It was like the primary and the presidential preference in the primary this year. I went to the polls to vote as a Democrat, and I had one choice. That was for the president. In Yavapai County, at least, through the rest of the ballot, there were no choices. There was some races didn't even have a Democratic candidate.
I think it's true that a lot of Arizona Democrats are at a disadvantage because there aren't people like Gary is saying on the ballot, so Democrats don't vote as much in the primary. And when you have local government, things are decided usually in the primaries rather than the general election. How did Donald Trump won Arizona? By how much, and is it? How does that compare with the last presidential races? Are the Republicans gaining vote, losing votes, or percentages?
So that's a great question, and this really shows to how Arizona is changing. In 2012, Mitt Romney got about 54% of the vote, maybe a little less than that, but Romney received more votes than Donald Trump this cycle. Donald Trump hasn't even gotten a majority of voters in Arizona at this time. I think he's right around 49%. Hillary is about 45% right now. I think they're going to finish up the ballot county today in the counties. And this really shows that a lot of people were not excited to vote for Donald Trump. Unfortunately, they weren't that excited to vote for Hillary Clinton as well nationally. But the margin certainly shrank on the presidential level here in Arizona.
Do we know how many people didn't vote for either candidate? And we know that they voted, but we also know that they did. None of the above was basically their vote on president.
Yeah.
Was there a vote like that, or can you measure it?
That's definitely something I'm going to look at because out of personal curiosity mostly, but I think there's going to be a lot of people who skip that race, which is surprising because it is the top of the ticket. Right now, the precinct-level files aren't released. You can go to each county's website. Some of them are better than others. So I simply haven't done that just to save myself some time. But you can look at total votes cast and then add up the number of votes for president and find out that the blank vote, essentially.
What are your most important or most interesting takeaways looking at the statistics and the numbers for this election in Arizona? Is there a message? First, I think that you mentioned is that the percentage of Republican presidential vote has gone down compared to past elections, and Democrats gone up. But what else is happening?
Right. So the Democratic percentage went up about 1%, which isn't too much. It's hard to compare to an election like 2008, where we have John McCain running. Obviously, he's going to get a much higher vote than other candidates would. But we are seeing that, you know, statewide, our races are becoming more competitive. In 2014, we had a number of good statewide candidates. We had David Garcia for superintendent, Terry Goddard, Felicia Rodolini. They were all running very well. One of the things is that David Garcia was the first candidate to win both Maricopa and Pima County and still lose the general election. That's sort of the new math that's happening here in Arizona. You need to win Maricopa County. Typically, the thought was you have to win Pima County by about 20,000 votes, hold it close in Maricopa, and hope for a wash in the other 13 counties. However, because of changing demographics, you know, Kingman is getting a lot larger, Prescott's a lot larger. Those are more conservative areas of the state. We have to make up that ground in some of our lower performing counties. Santa Cruz County, huge Democratic base for us. Apache County, they just don't have the population to overcome some of these growing areas that we have.
What's the percentage of the voting population in Arizona, the voters that live in Maricopa and Pima County compared to the rest of the state?
It's surprising. I am from Tucson. I got my political start in Tucson. So I knew that Maricopa County was larger, but I had no idea how much larger it was until I got there. Maricopa County accounts for roughly 60% of the voters in Arizona. Add in another 18%, maybe closer to 20 from Pima County. And then the rest, 20%, is just spread out amongst the state, and it's a large state. So the population centers are difficult to target sometimes.
We think of Sedona is split between Yavapai County and Coconino County, and we think of Yavapai County as the big county. But compared to what's going on, I mean, it's really, I don't remember the percentage now, but last time I looked up, it's a fairly small percentage of the vote. Our big county is a small percentage.
Yes, I think Yavapai County is fourth or fifth in total population. It's Maricopa, Pima, Pinal, and I forget if Mojave County's in front of you guys. But for the total voter turnout, Yavapai County crushes it every single election cycle. I mean, they're in the 80% turnout easily. I think you can...
Highest voter turnout, highest percentage of voters turning out in Yavapai County of any county in Arizona.
Yes.
It's going to be one of the top nationally.
I would imagine so, yeah.
85% seems astounding.
Yes. I think you're competing with Minnesota and Maine at that point. So.
Right.
And it's a largely Republican voting county.
Yeah.
Sedona votes Democratic, and Jerome. Clarkdale was split. I don't know if it voted Democratic this time, but split. So up here in the Verde Valley, we're kind of split. But over on the other side of the mountain, that part of Yavapai County, west of here.
They are not split.
No.
we have virtually nothing in common with the other side of the mountain.
Okay, so what else do you take away from this? And I guess as a Democrat, it's frustrating to lose these races. And you mentioned... we had Fred Duval, we had Felicia Rodolini, we had David Garcia. We had these absolutely great candidates.
Highly qualified,
and they always lose. It's very frustrating. Since I've been here, somebody said, well, you have to hold your nose to vote for the Democratic candidates. But I don't. I mean, they're all very, very good. I can think of one Democratic candidate that I didn't think was particularly good in the whole time I've been here. And yet, for Democrats, it's frustrating to lose all these elections, no matter how good our candidates are.
The superintendent of public instruction, David Garcia, that was particularly puzzling because he was such a highly qualified candidate, and lost to a woman that had virtually no experience and was a single issue.
Yeah, that's
candidate.
One of our big concerns is these down ballot races where the candidate that's running, for instance, Diane Douglas, is in my opinion not qualified. In many others' opinion, she does not know what she's doing. She's a walking talking point. But our voters don't vote down the ballot. They get to governor and they get to Congress and they say, who the heck are these guys, and stop voting.
You're talking about Democratic voters in particular.
So that hurts us a little bit. Sometimes candidates will get a little caught up in just focusing on Maricopa County, forgetting that there are a lot of voters in Pima County and Santa Cruz County that could they could easily run up the score there. But I do want to talk about some of the gains that we had in Arizona this cycle. The Democrats are we added one House member. The Senate did not change, the state Senate. And that's due in large part to the Democratic Party's legislative caucus. There are a number of other groups out there that also helped, the One Arizona table, pushing some independent expenditures for our candidates.
Is that extra seat going to contribute to more involvement in the legislature, or are we going to basically be ignored yet again?
I would imagine they still have the votes to ignore us. I shouldn't say that, but making those gains is always a positive.
Well, they do the budget by going off and on their own and sitting in a caucus and they determine the budget without any input from the opposing party, and then come back into the House and vote on it.
Right. Yeah, they do those shady midnight deals.
Are there
in the
still
back room.
Moderate Republicans in the legislature?
There are. There's a handful of them that are
could be crossover votes on some important issues.
They could be crossovers. You can definitely find the moderates when you look at the I think it's the Arizona Educators Association or School Board Association puts out the report card on all the legislators, and they don't put party on there. But if you look at the green check arrows, it's always for the Democrats. Until you get to some of the moderates, moderate Republicans will have probably about half of the green checks. The rest of the Republicans consistently vote against education. The Democrats are always in favor of what the school board and the Educators Association is in favor of.
What else? What is another takeaway from this election, Sam? Because this was a hard-fought, controversial election with kind of paradoxical results nationally. And Arizona has remained red. I mean, for the first time we had some, or not I guess the first time, Gary might know, but we had actually some national Democratic interest. They sent Michelle Obama here and
Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. They actually put some money and time. They were advertising in Arizona. Generally were kind of ignored. This time we got some advertising and some visits, right?
The DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Caucus, group spent quite a bit of money supporting Tom O'Halloran in the state, which that hasn't happened in the past. We had the usual amount of PAC and super PAC money going for Republican candidates, but
particularly Corporation Commission.
Yeah, they really overwhelmed the Democratic candidates for the Corporation Commission.
We've interviewed Nikki Bagley a couple of times here, and we thought she was one of the best candidates, attractive candidates in a sense, best backgrounds, deep roots in the Verde Valley and Prescott. And she lost, but not much, but she did finally lose, right? It finally has come down to that.
Yes, I know Gila County has stopped counting. I'm pretty sure Navajo is done as well. I haven't checked in with Yavapai and Coconino, but I imagine if they're not done already, they'll be done today.
Where did she lose the race? Where's
It's going to be in the eastern part of the district, over in Navajo County. Okay. Unfortunately, you don't get the the good parts of Navajo County.
Right. Get all the bad parts in that district, but none of the good parts. Give us Winslow, we'd have a Democrat in there.
But by bad parts, I do mean more conservative, not necessarily bad, but bad for Democratic candidates.
No, we know, Sam. We don't think Republicans are bad.
That's just what the district looks like. There's a huge overlap with Congressional District 1 and Nikki Bagley's district being bolstered by a congressional campaign. I know the O'Halloran campaign worked really well with our people, which was great to see. Oftentimes you don't get that with a big national campaign. They don't fold in well with our local candidates. But there's a big chunk that is very difficult for our party to cover, and that's Payson. It's a large part of Nikki's district, but when you look at the state overall, it's sort of a donut hole, because it's hard to justify putting a full-time person there because of how few voters there are. However, it does make up a large portion of what we need in Legislative District 6, and I think this cycle we did have a Payson office open, helping those people out, which is something we didn't have in 2014.
Sort of thing that Sam does. He thinks about these things, like where to put offices and how the vote comes in statistically. That's one reason we're talking to him.
I know Nikki spent a fair amount of time over there. It's really disappointing to me, and that Nikki again was highly qualified, a very moderate candidate, yet she loses narrowly to one of the most extreme people in the state, and that's true of the House seats as well. That LD6 has consistently the most extreme people in the state house.
Yeah, it's surprising too, because there are some very solidly Democratic areas in your district. You'd expect the people to be coming out of this district to be a little bit more moderate, but instead you have
moderate Republicans at least in part, right?
Yeah. Instead, you get Sylvia Allen with the Earth is 6,000 years old sort of deal,
and the so-called education candidate who is against public instruction and votes consistently for private education.
So are Democrats, Sam, are they getting closer to winning in our LD and for both for the state House of Representatives and the Senate? Are they getting closer? Yeah. Are we getting further away?
Sure. So in 2012, when Tom Chabon ran for the state Senate, the same office that Nikki Bagley was running for, he got, 41% of the vote. He got about 43%. In 2014, Tom O'Halloran ran as an independent, and he got 48.6% of the vote. Followed with Nikki Bagley this year, who right now is at 48.6% of the vote, but she ran as an outright Democrat. I think that's very encouraging, that we don't have to hide behind an independent label, that we can actually run as a full-blooded Democrat and expect the same amount of votes.
It's kind of hard to make the brand of being a Democrat mean anything if people keep hiding and as independents and don't come out and actually label themselves and support the party.
That's right. And, that's something that worked really well for Ann Kirkpatrick in 2014. She didn't run away from her Affordable Care vote, her Obamacare vote. She owned it. She embraced it, and that really worked well for her. Unfortunately, when you add in other areas of the state where she's running for senator, that doesn't play as well. But I knew that when I was voting for Ann Kirkpatrick, that this was a vote to make sure that children keep their health insurance until 26. I knew that this senator supported raising the minimum wage. It's really nice to have that kind of quality in a Democrat that's able to own these issues, show a distinction between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, but also be her own candidate. I personally have some issues with Ann's stance with the EPA and the Navajo coal generating plant, but I understand that this is it's a huge part of her district.
I understand on guns sort of bothers a lot of Democrats.
Absolutely.
But she's a moderate Democrat. She's a wonderful person. You know, we all know her personally. It's really sad that she lost this election because we'd like to see her involved. What's a lot of it, I guess my question is not pretty naive, is how much of it is John McCain's name recognition?
A lot of it.
I think that a lot of people didn't know who she was. Certainly people in the district do.
They still mistakenly believe he's a maverick, and he hasn't been a maverick or a moderate for, 12, 15, 16 years.
Yeah, John McCain really has built up that brand of not being one of those Republicans you hear about on the news.
He claims not to be an extremist.
Yes, yet exactly. He is. Yeah, he plays it very quietly. A good word that I picked up this, it's not really a word, but is my anecdata, sort of. my anecdata story is I registered my neighbor, who is an older Hispanic gentleman from Guatemala. He's an American citizen now. I registered for the first time, did not like Trump. I figured that out through our broken English-Spanish conversation. But, you know, I asked him about John McCain. He said, yeah, he's okay. You know, and I think, you know, that kind of reaction is, I know who he is. He hasn't offended me.
This is Mr. Yeah. You know, build the dang fence.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's one question we need to ask you is, and maybe you can answer and maybe not, was there an increase in Latino registration and voting this election or not?
Yeah.
I mean, we had the governor saying they don't vote, you know, good old Jan Brewer, they don't vote, so they don't count.
Right. So the issue I had with Jan Brewer's statement is that she said it wrong. I mean, it's insulting to say that Hispanics and Latinos don't vote. They do, however, make up about 18 to 20% of the registered voters in the state, and about 30% of the population overall, maybe a little less than that. But their representation of the actual electorate is much lower than what it is just general population wise. Something encouraging that we saw this cycle is that in 2012, about 6% of the electorate was Hispanic. In 2016, that doubled to about 12%. I think it was getting towards 13% towards the end of early voting. We don't have who showed up at the polls yet. Hopefully we'll get that in the next few months. But that's very encouraging to see more participation from all voters, really. I think we're going to have maybe a record number of voters in general, but having some of these like historically disenfranchised communities.
The future looks really good if Democrats don't become complacent and take them for granted, that the population is turning more and more diverse, and more Latino and Hispanic. And I saw a map of the vote nationally. You know, you see the vote, the counties marked red, you know, a sea of red when you look at the total vote in their islands of blue in the urban centers. But if you look at the map where it's voters under 30, the country was almost entirely blue. And so Democrats have a great opportunity with young people, millennials, and with Latinos and Hispanics. If we don't take them for granted and we actually get out and encourage them and mobilize.
Sure. And that's a statistic of younger voters voting liberal. That's been going on for a while. But the problem happens is the same thing that happened in the presidential primary for Bernie Sanders. Younger voters were supporting him 90% to 10, except they made up 3% of the electorate. I would much rather have a group of people making up 90% of the electorate voting for me. And what we see is that voters 35 and younger, they aren't even, their total registration doesn't even match the older part of the electorate at 65 plus. The number of voters in 65 plus is more than the total registration of the other two.
In my own opinion, I think that tells us that we need to look at why they're changing their pattern, voting pattern as they get older. You know, it's we're only going to change the situation incrementally, you know, bit by bit. If we can gradually convert more and more Latinos and Hispanics to come out and vote and become involved, and if we can keep the young people involved and encourage them to you know, continue to participate, I think we can change it. But what I see personally too often is those two groups kind of taken for granted, and we focus, at least nationally, on other groups. We've kind of abandoned the 50-state strategy. We kind of focus on race by race and ignore the brand and the party as a whole.
Sure. There was a good Saturday Night Live sketch after the election where they had basically some young millennials at a Hillary Clinton watch party, just not understanding that Latinos and young people don't turn out and vote. For us in this room, we are politically active. We understand the importance of voting. But for some people who are trying to get a job, traveling to work, trying to get through school, voting is not at the top of their list.
Well,
at all.
And a lot
and it's difficult to reach through the noise of their everyday life.
What do you try to do? Sorry, Gary. What do you try to do to reach younger voters to get them involved and get them active? Or does the Democratic Party have a program in Arizona trying to reach them? Or you basically reach out to pretty much everybody?
Yes. We don't have anything specifically tailored to younger voters, and that's something we need to work on. We want to make sure that all people that are supportive of Democratic candidates vote. You know, a young person's vote counts just as much as an older person's.
In a lot of states, the young people were disenfranchised because the some of the states did away with accepting a student ID as appropriate ID. You know,
it's also registration, where you're registered. You're at college during the election.
And
right?
I think that Bernie Sanders proved, you know, again, I keep hearing, you know, party bigwigs kind of dismiss, you know, certain factions of the vote. And I think Bernie Sanders proved that the young people in this country can be, you know, hugely mobilized and will turn out to vote. The problem in the primaries is so many of them weren't members of the Democratic Party and therefore couldn't participate in the primaries. So my message to those people is join the party. Get registered in a party where you can vote in the primaries and actually affect the primary.
Yeah, it's tricky to get that message across and to younger folks with the, you know, be a Democrat, be a Republican. It's very difficult to make that choice. You only have two choices. We're not used to just two choices, so we're going to pick neither. And Congress isn't doing us any favors by not doing anything, essentially. I don't want to pick a side that doing anything.
There's an attitude that I once had that by being an independent, registering as an independent, that I was kind of above the fray. I was sort of, I didn't get down in the muck and dirty my hands by being a real partisan. I could sit in judgment without having to involve myself in it. And I think that that attitude has to change, even if it means a strong third party. It has to change. People need to be involved.
I want to ask Sam a national question, something that I've wondered about. There were so many Republicans elected across the country, and I've assumed that those were just really long coattails on Trump's part. Is that correct? Do you have any statistics, numbers, or observations to back that up, or tell me that it's not so?
I don't look outside of Arizona very often, but I think, the Democrats gained seats in the U.S. Senate. Is that correct?
They gained two seats
in
the Senate.
So that's always a positive. The other thing that we have to consider, and this will come up faster than we like, is redistricting. A lot of these districts that were carved out for congressmen in 2010 and 2012 were done by Republican legislatures. Fortunately, here in Arizona, we're fortunate enough to have an independent commission, and that really made our districts more competitive.
They are. I mean, the district that Tom O'Halloran, yeah. That our district is a competitive district.
Absolutely.
It could be won by a Republican any race,
yeah.
Anytime.
In 2014, there were three congressional districts that were competitive in Arizona. In all of the United States, the DCCC was looking at, I think, 30 top-tier races, and 10% of those are in Arizona, and that's thanks to our redistricting commission.
The one of the examples of gerrymandering, I think, is one of the horrific examples, is the city of Austin, Texas, is extremely progressive, extremely liberal. They have so gerrymandered that area that they peeled off portions of it and stuck it into other very rural, very conservative, districts. So it's impossible for this massive group of people in a large city to have any representation in either the state house or in the Congress.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's happened throughout the country and in Republican-controlled states.
Being objective for a minute, not thinking Republicans or Democrats, what do you think the implications are of having a vote, for example, when Democrats repeatedly win the popular vote, but every once in a while they lose the Electoral College? And so that you have – are Democrats, in this case, going to feel disenfranchised by this whole process, the gerrymandering of the House, the fact that there are more small states with two senators? So you have – I think Wyoming is – I said the other day it had 400 – I think it has 600,000 people, and California has, what, 36 million people, and they both have two senators. It's – the system, I don't think it's a conspiracy at all. I just think the system is sort of out of kilter in terms of being representative. And I know that your analysis is here in Arizona, but how is this going to play out over time, do you think? Are people going to be more discouraged or more
active? People will catch up. Voters are smart. They know what they're doing. And I think a lot of the chatter about disenfranchisement and voter fraud, it's now being framed in the fact that you're not being allowed to vote. That's the fraud that's happening. When in North Carolina, for instance, when they specifically looked at what forms of identification do African Americans not have, that's the type of ID we're going to require at the polls. That's the voter fraud that needs to be talked about. How there in this country there isn't a right to vote. We have the right, but it's not given to us like the freedom of speech or something like that.
You have to work for it.
Right. It's something that the voters are catching on to, and they're going to call BS on it.
Do you think the voter registration suppression efforts, the cut down to the number of precincts all over the South, contributed to the results in this election? or do we know?
It's tricky to tell in states in the South because typically those states will go Republican regardless. But there is a stat that minority communities will have to wait in line much longer than their white counterparts.
I think there was a statistic that was since the Supreme Court weakened the voter law,
yeah,
that there were 800 and I believe 60 some fewer voting stations in the states that had been subject to the compliance.
And you actually saw a little microburst of this in Arizona in the presidential preference election. Maricopa County, we had it, this is in February or March rather. They set up vote centers, which are great. Vote centers are wonderful. You can go to any vote center in the county and cast your ballot. You don't have to be at the right one. But they set up 60 vote centers for an eligible population of about 2 million voters. It was chaos afterwards. People were in line for 5 hours trying to vote. And it wasn't just Democratic communities. We're talking Sun City, Scottsdale, areas where... I mean, if the Voting Rights Act had been in place, they would have never have gotten pre-clearance to do only 60 locations.
It cost the recorder her job.
It did.
Thankfully.
Yes. Now we've got recorder Adrian Fontes coming in. Hopefully he'll do a good job. Other counties are moving towards vote centers. I think Yavapai and Yuma were some of the first in 2012.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gila County had a very good idea or a good system this year in that they had vote centers in their major populated areas. Mm-hmm. So Payson, Globe, Miami, they all had vote centers where anybody in the county could come and vote at that place. But if you lived out in Pine or Strawberry or something, you still voted at the Baptist church. You had your own poll location, but I don't know anybody from Payson.
When I worked at the polls, you constantly ran into people who were trying to vote in the wrong precinct.
Absolutely.
It was a serious issue. And look, when you're telling you can't vote here, it won't be counted, the people get really, really mad.
Absolutely.
And then they have to go off, 20 miles away or 10 miles away or 2 miles away. And I think this is an improvement.
As a principle, I think that we must make it easier for citizens to vote. And what's sad is that there are states like Minnesota and I believe Wisconsin have same-day registration. You can walk into the polls and register with proper ID.
That's definitely something Arizona needs. There's no reason why we can't verify a registration on the same day. Let's count it as a provisional ballot that you dropped off.
So
Republicans are taking it away.
Yeah. We're talking to Sam Almy today, and Sam is the elections director, and we're talking statistics and stuff. I hope you folks have enjoyed it. Sam, we got a minute or so left. What's the most important lesson from this last election in Arizona and your studying of all these statistics and stuff? You spend your whole life studying all this stuff, right?
I think the biggest, the most positive takeaway that I've seen, I've been the elections director since 2012, is that Arizona is trending blue. We want to win right now. Nobody denies that, but it's going to be a longer game for us. Getting rid of Sheriff Joe Arpaio is great. We're holding our congressional seats. Hopefully we can take back the one in Tucson and then continue that momentum going forward.
Well, thank you very much for being here.
This show and all our shows are available on our website, vvid.org. They're available on iTunes and some mirror sites that we don't even know about, apparently. I hope you'll tune in next week. I think we're going to be discussing fraudulent websites that concentrate on telling lies about what's going on in elections. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.